Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
It's freezing cold outside, but that doesn't matter because we're in here, and from in here it looks beautiful, and it's about to get more beautiful on the radio. Vassos, over to you.
Our next guest is the psychology professor, podcaster, best-selling author and TED talker who is officially in the world's top 10 most influential management thinkers. His latest book, Hidden Potential, is out now, so please welcome a man who can't but enchant. It's Adam Grant.
Hi, Adam.
So thrilled to be here. This is British enthusiasm like I've never seen it before.
Oh, come on. It's what we do. It's how we live. It's how we breathe. We are part of your tribe and you're definitely part of our tribe. So you're in the top 10. You made it to the top 10 influential thinkers. That's amazing. On the planet. Any imposter syndrome there as mentioned in your new book, Hidden Potential?
Oh, definitely. It's a lot of pressure now.
Yeah. So imposter syndrome can be a tell for hidden potential.
Surprisingly. Yeah, I think I had no idea that this was true, but it turns out that when you feel like an imposter and you think other people are overestimating you, you might actually be underestimating yourself because they have seen your hidden potential. They've seen a capacity for growth that you're not aware of yet.
So what do we do about that if we are the victim of our own take on imposter syndrome?
Well, I think if multiple people believe in you, it's probably time to believe them.
To become part of your own fan club, I suppose. You did have imposter syndrome. I know all about the first lecture to the American generals. That's hilarious.
I didn't find it funny, but I'm glad you were entertained.
You find it funny now?
Yeah, it's hilarious now. It was painful then.
Can you tell that story in 30 seconds or not?
Yeah, I think I can. I basically had to teach leadership and motivation to these senior military leaders, and I was 25 years old, and they were a bunch of sort of Top Gun characters. And their feedback afterward was brutal. One of them wrote, "I gained nothing from the session, but I trust the instructor got useful insight."
Ouch. And so what did you do next?
Well, I wanted to quit, but I had already committed to do a second session. And so the only thing I could do was change my introduction. So I went in, instead of selling my credentials and talking about my expertise and trying to prop myself up, I said, "Hey, I know what you're all thinking right now. What could I possibly learn from a professor who's 12 years old?" And they burst out laughing, and it really broke the ice. And I got much better feedback afterward, and I learned that showing a little more vulnerability was a helpful way to connect with my
audience.
And
did somebody shout from the audience, "No, come on, you look at least 13.
Yeah, that was actually the moment that I think made me feel like it was going to be okay.
How old are you now?
I am 42.
40?
42.
42. All right, so you're 17 years on from that. You've learned so much. You are so useful to us now. One of the best things we can all do to feel better about ourselves every day is to be useful, isn't it? That's right up there. You talk about, in Hidden Potential, your new book, you talk about character. You say it's the single most important thing. Speak to that, if you don't mind, a bit more.
Yeah, I actually didn't go in looking for character, but it showed up in the data over and over again. It turns out that kindergarten is where most of us think we learn character skills. Yeah. Discipline, determination, being proactive in seeking new knowledge, pro-social in sharing your knowledge with others. And if you are taught those skills in kindergarten, you actually end up being more likely to graduate from college and also being more successful in your career.
All right. So speaking to character, let's talk about wabi-sabi. So that gets a mention. Thank God. I love wabi-sabi. I've got the book wabi-sabi. I don't know if you have the book. So how does wabi-sabi speak to half a character and half of something else?
Okay. So wabi-sabi is the Japanese art of finding the beauty in imperfection, which sounds like an oxymoron to me as a recovering perfectionist. But I think the power of it is to say that it's really hard to ever improve if you're trying to never be flawed. And so you need to figure out what mistakes are acceptable to make so that you can keep taking risks and growing.
Right, so the wabi-sabi is also a combination of character and discipline, isn't it? And we've been talking this week about, and last week about, discipline doesn't come from stability, but stability can come from discipline, and it's really handy and it's really helpful. You talk about there about kindergarten and about character in kindergarten and developing that. And then you also give a massive, you know, multi-page shout out to Finland. How do you get to Finland in the book?
Well, I wanted to write about how teachers and schools could bring out the hidden potential in students. And Finland, as a lot of people know, has surprised in the PISA scores. Students outperform year after year.
What's PISA for people who don't know?
So it's the international standardized test of 15-year-olds to try to figure out who's the best at...
Educators.
Yeah, exactly, at STEM, at reading. And Finland was not expected to dominate, and they won 3 years in a row. They've had some challenges in the last few years, but I wanted to know, what are they doing that's supported by evidence that we might want to think about in UK and US schools?
And so what did you find?
Well, one of the interesting things they do is they actually keep students with the same teacher for multiple years. And a lot of parents, they don't get it at first. And they say, well, you know, what if my kid has Professor Snape? I don't want that teacher for a second year. But Finland has highly professionalized teaching. So they want every kid to have a great teacher. And what they find is that if teachers get to spend multiple years with their students, they actually can become specialists in their kids, not just in their subjects. And then instead of just being instructors, they become coaches and mentors, and they do much more personalized education.
What's really interesting about the reaction, not the response from the parents, is they immediately default to, what if they get a bad teacher? Yeah, but what if they get loads of great teachers as well?
Exactly. And there have been some very good randomized controlled experiments in multiple states in the US and also in Chile, showing that if you have the same teacher for multiple years, that you actually grow more. And that's especially true if you were a poor student or if you had a poor teacher.
Right. It's all about growth, isn't it? You talk about growth a lot in the book.
I think there's probably no higher human value than trying to get better today than you were yesterday.
It's so interesting. We were talking about it before, weren't we? Off the air, we were talking about, you know, in golf, they always teach to follow through, you know, get through the ball, don't hit the ball. Because if you hit the ball like you hit a nail with a hammer, you'll just stop after you've hit it, and you've got to get through it. And it's like a day like today, we're very fortunate. You know, we've got a great show. You know, we're literally at the top of the town, at the top of our game. But we need to follow through. We need to create goals, don't we? And it's... You know, by the way, I'm so grateful for what we get to do every day. But it is more difficult when there is apparently nowhere else to go. What do we do? How do we follow through? Where do we go to next?
Well, I'm not qualified to answer that question. But I think the way that I would start is to say you probably hear a lot from cheerleaders and critics. You've got cheerleaders who are basically applauding your best moments and critics who are attacking your worst moments. Yeah. And I think what we really need are coaches. People who see our hidden potential and try to really help us become better versions of ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I guess I would ask the question, who are your best coaches? And then can you ask them for one thing you can do better each show?
Mm-hmm. And also, you don't have to know the people to have them on your board of personal directors.
Not at all. Sometimes your best role models and advisors are people you observe from a distance.
Which is why I listen to everything you do. Everywhere you do it, and I read all your books.
That's a huge honor.
No, but I really do, and I love it. The other thing that Finland were getting right was that the other end of the mantel shelf, as far as the bookends are concerned, which was kindergarten. So they were having 1 hour lessons, but with a 15-minute recess at the end of every single lesson, because kids should be playing first and foremost. And even if they're learning a bit, they still have to play a lot.
Yeah, it turns out that if you want to look at who the best students are going to be here in the UK at age 16, they're the ones who enjoyed school most at age 6. If you teach kids that learning is fun, they become more intrinsically motivated and engaged.
And didn't you say to one of your recent guests, the lady neuroscientist we were talking about the other day on the show, didn't you discuss, you and she discussed the fact that people who, so the number one trait we have found of successful people, whatever that means, is that they get up early. And she says the number one tell for future success is if your kids read, they have a massively more chance of succeeding than if they, or becoming, you know, useful in society.
Learning to love reading is part of learning to love learning. Right. And I think every parent has a responsibility and an opportunity, not just to fill their house with books, but to actually, something I learned was one day one of our daughters said to me, Dad, why don't you ever read? And I literally have more books than probably all other possessions combined. Like, why do you think I don't read? Turns out I did all my reading when our kids were asleep.
Yeah.
And so I changed that habit so they actually get to see me reading and then pick it up.
And also, you know, it's about offering different books up different flavors. It's not that our kids might not like reading. It's just that they might not like the title or the cover of the book that we're suggesting they read. So enter Harry Potter or David Walliams or other books like that.
Yeah, I heard from a teacher recently who actually would hide books in different places in her classroom. And then when kids found them, they were able to share them with the rest of the class. And it became kind of an exciting way to discover a new story.
Talking of stories, one of the best ways to get anything across is a story, especially mixed with humor or insight or, you know, instruction. You have some unsung heroes in the book. They're now being sung from the highest heights via the page of your book, and also their ultimate achievements from their hidden potential. A couple of superstars in there. The guy who wanted to be an astronaut, I mean, that story is formidable. It's give us the headlines and the highlights of that story, where this guy came from, all his false starts, all his disappointments, and how he never stopped trying. In the end, he did actually wave the white flag, but then even his wife stepped in and said, no, you can't give up. And he started by watching YouTube.
Jose Hernandez, it's one of the most extraordinary stories I've ever come across. So he grows up in a migrant farm family. So he's an illegal immigrant from Mexico to the United States. He really struggles early on in school because he doesn't even speak English when he arrives. And he wants to go. He wants to go to space from the day he sees a moon landing. But, you know, his grades are terrible. His parents can't really help him. Eventually, he ends up going to college and nearly flunking out. He gets an engineering degree. He starts sending out applications to NASA and gets rejection letter after rejection letter after rejection letter.
Why wouldn't he? Of course.
I mean, six times in a row. And finally, he crumples up the paper and throws it at the garbage. And his wife has to pick it up and say, "You cannot give up, because I don't want to be married to a grumpy 70-year-old who regrets not following his dream."
Yeah, yeah. His initial goal of wanting to be an astronaut got him so far down the line that if he looked back, and I suppose in the end he did start to look back, he'd achieved so much anyway via his goal that was enough. But his wife said, no, this is not enough. So he was 36, 37, and he was still almost a decade away from going to space, and he'd given up at the age of 36, 37. But it didn't mean his dream didn't come true.
No, and I think one of the things I learned from Jose is the man is a human sponge. So what does he do first when he gets rejected from NASA? He sends a request for information about how he can improve his application next time. And then when he fails, he goes and studies astronauts to see what they have that he doesn't. And he learns he's got to become a scuba diver. He needs to get a pilot's license. And then eventually he needs something that's going to help him get to the space station. So he goes to Siberia and learns Russian so that he can interact with cosmonauts. And finally, he stands out.
Mid-30s. You know, he's done so much. He's come so far from almost less than nothing. So he starts to learn to fly because he's heard that might help. And then he scuba dives because that might help. And then he speaks Russian because that might help. And in the end, he goes to space. He flies 5 million miles. Is that
something
right?
Something like that, yeah.
Wow.
And yet, the distance he traveled from, you know, migrant farm worker to astronaut was much greater than he ever went in space. And I think one of the other things that Jose's story really highlighted for me is I think we judge people's hidden potential in the wrong way.
Yeah.
So NASA was trying to predict who was the candidate with the right stuff. And they were looking for the smartest engineers, the best pilots. What they should have been looking at was the trajectory of progress and the obstacles that a candidate overcame, not just the peak they had reached.
And you have that lovely cartoon in your book, don't you, of what colleges look for, what universities look for, what NASA used to look for, but they've changed their selection process now, you know, not least of all because of Xavier's progress. And you have these stars climbing up mountains, don't you? Literally rising stars. And that's what we should be looking for.
It's amazing how many times we miss that, though, because it's so easy to be impressed by somebody who's already made it, who's achieved the performance you're looking for. But that means you're overlooking a lot of late bloomers.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on, let it go.
Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The book is brilliant. We're talking to Adam Grant about another brilliant book that he's written. How many books have you written now?
Six,
okay. The last one, which seemed like about a minute ago, I thought you were coming on to talk about clear thinking again, but you've written another book, like I don't know when, on the plane or something. But it's a brilliant book, Hidden Potential. The story that made my hair stand on end last night, while I was listening to Johann Sebastian Bach, bizarrely, was the story about the musician, the UK musician, the lady who is deaf, who so wanted to play, you know, at such a professional level. She started to learn music via the vibrations of the sounds from the speakers on a hi-fi through the walls of her parents' house. This story is unbelievable. If you want to do something and you think you don't have what it takes to do it, you have to read this bit of the book. Tell us a bit more about her story.
Evelyn Glennie is one of the most impressive people I've ever met. She's profoundly deaf, and she started losing her hearing when she was young, but she didn't want to give up on her passion for music. And she sat down with her music teacher and learned that when she put her body against the wall, she could feel different notes in different parts of her body. So, in her feet, it might be lower notes. In her temple, it might be a higher note. And then they basically turned the learning process into a game. And so there's a challenge. Okay, what note is this? And you get to finer and finer distinctions between notes. And now she's, I think, the world's first and also best solo percussionist.
That is an incredible story, isn't it? I mean, out of all the stories you've heard, that must be right up there.
I don't think I've ever been more inspired by a human being.
What about the javelin throw that kept falling flat on his face and thought, hang on a minute, there's something in this?
Julius Yego. Okay, so Julius grows up in Kenya, fails at football, fails at running, but really wants to be an athlete, and eventually picks up the javelin. But he doesn't have a coach, doesn't have the right equipment, so he's got to do something to get better. And one day he gets to an internet cafe and starts watching YouTube videos of javelin throwers, and he teaches himself based on what he sees.
YouTube again.
I mean, unreal. And he goes on to become an Olympic silver medalist.
Wow. And the guy, there literally was a David and Goliath situation. Tell us about the switcheroo there. What happened?
Yeah, so he's got a major competitor early on who's quite a bit taller and stronger than him. And the guy, you know, he looks like the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
And he's far better than Julius. But what happens is over time, he ends up stagnating because he's only reacting to the input that he gets from his coaches, whereas Julius is really proactive and he's constantly searching out new ways to improve his skills.
And you have that lovely graphic in your book of the gold, silver and bronze podium where you have the winners of each category on there. But then you've created what, if you could see below the surface, if those three podium places were the top of a pyramid, what would the rest of the pyramid look like and the journey to get to those places?
Yeah, I think this is one of the really unfortunate things about the way we look at role models is we only see them at their peak and they seem out of reach. I remember watching Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech when I started doing public speaking. And I watched that and said, it doesn't matter how much I practice, I will never be anywhere near that good, so I might as well quit. But what I didn't see was the 20 years of practice that MLK had put in before that. I didn't get to see him start doing public speaking competitions when he was 15 years old.
Wow.
And I think what we need to do is we need to take the people we admire and rewind to the point where they started.
Yeah.
And that makes them much more relatable.
It makes them much more relatable. But that is sort of the antithesis of another one of your friends, Morris, because he's this chess grandmaster. And he taught these, the rooks, what are they called?
The Raging Rooks.
The Raging Rooks, who are from where?
They're from Harlem.
And they shouldn't be any good at chess because of their sociological conditions, socioeconomic conditions. And various different cultures, and he, because they don't want to play chess anyway, so he engages them by showing them the end of the game first. So look, this is how you, this is how it looks like when you win. How do we get here? Well, let's go backwards, which is not dissimilar to what you're saying, I suppose. Just now.
It's actually a fascinating observation. So I think Maurice Ashley is one of the greatest coaches I've ever met. And he's a chess grandmaster, but he wasn't when he took over this coaching role.
He was
in his 20s, and he takes a group of students who are extremely disadvantaged.
Yeah.
A lot of them have never played chess before, as sixth and seventh graders. One of them learned chess in a park from a drug dealer. And they're competing against these elite private schools that have basically built the chess equivalent of an Olympic training center. And Maurice says, I've got to do something to get these kids excited about the game. And if you start with the beginning moves, like, okay, you move the king's pawn forward two squares, they're going to be really bored and confused.
Yeah.
So instead, I'll just put a few pieces on the board, and I'm going to show them how to do a checkmate. And they're going to get the thrill of victory and also the frustration of defeat. And then they're going to be fired up to work backward and figure out, how do I get
to the end game? How'd you get here? And he's written a book called Move to Move. I haven't read it. Have you read it?
Yeah.
It's great.
Oh, he's brilliant. He teaches you how to think like a chess player.
Yeah. And apply it to life.
Exactly.
Amazing. So you just touched upon public speaking there. I've got to ask you about Jennifer Garner. So the whole Jennifer Garner thing, it came to light because you both publicly speak together in a conversational interview situation where she's interviewing you about your book. But the way you got her to do that is because previously she'd reached out to you to ask you for tips on presenting a TED talk, which she still hasn't done, by the way. However, it's all good in the wash. It all comes out in the wash. What happened there?
This is ironic because I'm an introvert and I was extremely shy and afraid of public speaking when I started. So the idea that Jennifer Garner is going to ask me for advice on a TED talk, talk about imposter syndrome. Like, I never thought that would happen. But I was supposed to do a book event with Rainn Wilson from the American version of The Office, and he came down with COVID. And the morning of the event, I had no host. And I sent a Hail Mary. I emailed Jen and said, hey, I've got this event tonight. Any chance you're in town and bored? And within an hour, she said, I got you. And she showed up. She read a big chunk of the book literally in the car on the way over. And I had no idea what was going to happen in this event. And it was one of the most delightful and surprising conversations I've ever had.
It's so good, isn't it? Because I listen to everything you do, and Malcolm Gladwell and all those other people, all your pals. When you do a podcast that's live, they're okay. But of course, because they're also being hosted and performed, there is a performative aspect to them because there's an audience. As a listener, as a selfish podcast listener, sometimes I don't get some of my juice because you're sort of splitting your loyalty, if you like. But her hosting you, because it was a surprise and you get extra heat from that situation, but she showed her hidden potential as an interviewer.
I mean, she's just an incredible improv comedian, which I had no idea. And, you know, I just thought we were doing a live event for the audience, to your point. And every single email I got afterwards said, you've got to run this on your Rethinking podcast so that other people can hear it.
I didn't know that. So it wasn't initially going to be a Rethinking.
It wasn't planned at all.
Okay, just speak to Rethinking briefly, because you're on to talk about Hidden Potential. Adam Grant, number one New York Times bestselling author of Think Again, brand new book. It is gold. Every single line, every paragraph, every page is... He only deals in gold, this guy. I can say that about him. He doesn't have to say that. It doesn't matter. Just speak about your podcast, Rethinking. So to give it a little ad, because I want people to get involved with that as well.
Sure. So as a psychologist, one of my passions is questioning assumptions.
Yes.
And I thought one of the most interesting ways for me to keep learning would be to host a show where I bring people on who think differently from me. Because I believe that great minds don't think alike. They challenge each other to think again. Mm-hmm. And so Rethinking is all about bringing on people who are going to change the way I think about how I work, lead, live.
And you have a quick fire section in each podcast. They're very listenable because I wish they were longer, but lots of people like them things shorter. What's your favorite question that you've asked and been asked in your quickfire round?
Ooh, my favorite question that I ask is, what's the worst advice you've ever gotten?
Right.
Because I think it debunks a lot of common myths.
Yep.
Probably my favorite question I've been asked is, this one actually really caught me off guard. The question was, what's something that you think you're wrong about right now?
Right. My favorite quote about being wrong, I heard the other day, and I say it's my favorite. You know, I'm like Vassos, a dog with a new bone. The last quote is usually my favorite quote, was when people tell you you're wrong, they're usually right. But when they tell you how to fix it, they're usually wrong.
Oh, that's so well put.
Do you like that?
Yes, because they have some distance. Yes. And they can see the problems that are invisible to you.
Yes.
But that same distance means they're not qualified to figure out what the solution is.
So listen to the criticism, but don't listen to the suggestion of the solution, maybe. Or maybe listen to it, but not
consider it.
Yeah, consider it.
Test it.
You talk about scaffolding, which is really important, really useful. We talk about strength and conditioning because we're both runners. We talk about strength and conditioning as well as getting in the miles for the marathon, because the strength and conditioning is the scaffolding around your legs that help them to do what you want them to do, and they just sort of underpin all the training. Scaffolding is not dissimilar in learning in a hidden potential, especially when it comes to kids, but not exclusively for kids. We've got a minute left. Can you give us a minute on scaffolding, please?
I can try. I think most people believe they need one permanent mentor or coach to get better, and ongoing help is going to be what helps them grow. That is not the case. It turns out what we need is temporary support. And what scaffolding typically does for us is it's a temporary structure that allows us to build a skill we don't have, and then the support structure gets removed and we can guide our own learning.
Right. Beautiful. That was less than a minute, wasn't it? It's so good. It's all in here. What about when you're talking to Maurice on your podcast? He said a lot of people, the biggest risk in life is they don't take enough risks. For people who are averse to risk taking and are suffering therefore from it, and know that and are suffering chronic lo-fi mood because of it, can you back to your other thing, your springboarding, because you used to be a diver, didn't you? Can you springboard them into action?
Okay. Well, let's see. What psychologists find is that in the long run, our biggest regrets are not our failures. They're our failures to try.
Wow. Okay. And how can you get unstuck from not wanting to start?
I think the thing I learned actually in diving was I felt like I needed to build my confidence in order to take the leap to try a new dive. And I had that backward. You build your confidence by taking the leap.
Right, okay. And speaking of getting stuck, what about procrastination? You say that procrastination isn't a fear of starting. It's the fear of how doing what you want to do but are fearful of doing will make you feel. It's a discomfort.
Yeah, this is the work of Fuchsia Sirwa here in the UK. And what she shows is that often we're not avoiding hard work or effort. We're avoiding negative feelings that a task stirs up, which might be anxiety. Can I do this?
Yes.
It might be boredom. Yes. This is really repetitive. It might be frustration or confusion. I'm not sure where to go next.
You're an organizational psychologist. Some of the biggest, most successful names in the world know you and draw from your wisdom. Serena Williams, for example, brilliant, will shatter your assumptions, she says on the front cover of your new book. At the age of 42, how far in the future do you think about organizing your own life? What can you give us before you go to help us with our future years?
Well, I like to think in hours and days and decades. Right. And I think what a lot of us do when we're trying to make plans is we go to other people for advice. And we forget that nobody really knows what's best for us. So my favorite suggestion when you're thinking about your future is to find somebody else who's struggling with where they want to go next. Give them some advice and then listen to your own suggestions, because the advice you give to others is usually what you need to take for yourself.
And you're giving it to them because you don't want to confront yourself with that advice.
That it's amazing how often that happens.
What about this one? People underestimate what they can do in a year, but they overestimate what they can do in a day. What do you think about that?
I think that's true. In psychology, it's called the planning fallacy.
Tell us about
What the research on this suggests is that we forget how many different things need to be done in order to accomplish a task. And so, you know, if you ask people how much they'll produce today, they might skip half of what needs to happen, and then it's a week's worth of work. But in the long run, we don't appreciate accumulation. And so if you do the addition of, you know, thousands of days of effort, this is something you guys appreciate as runners. We have a hard time visualizing how all those elements will ultimately come together.
Yeah. What we all say about marathon training is on the day of the marathon, the hard work is to get to the start line, and then you run 26.2 miles to collect your medal. It's just a celebration of your training. It's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know what you tell yourself, though, during the three or so hours in between while you're running.
But... Well, when you run the London London Marathon, for example, or the New York Marathon, you don't tell yourself anything because 2.5 million people cheering you on and you feel like Eliud Kipchoge, regardless of your pace. Can you give us anything else? Give the people listening any other golden nugget
well,
to go away with.
I think one of the things that a lot of people have been asking about is parenting.
Yes.
As a parent, how do I nurture the hidden potential
yes,
in
please,
my child?
Please, please.
And I don't think I spend enough time on this in the book, but one of the things I've learned as a parent is sometimes you're the worst person to help your kids realize their potential.
Mm-hmm.
I had this happen with one of our daughters recently. She was competing in a sport and I gave her a bunch of praise and she said, "You have to say that. You're my dad."
Oh, ouchie. But you wanted to say that because you are her dad.
Of course. But I realized at that point that the best thing I can do is find her a coach or a mentor who she sees as unbiased.
Yeah. Somebody else was saying similar the other day. You know, when your kids get 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, pick a number, they've got you. They've learned everything they can from you. They love you. Hopefully they love you. They like you. They want to be with you sometimes, but not all the time. But you can't really teach them anything else because they are deaf to all that. You know, that's why the Charlie Brown, the grown-ups for Charlie Brown, wah, wah, wah. So you expose them to new grown-ups with new energy, with a new flavor that they might be able to see and hear.
So important. And it's why I tell my mom frequently, whenever she gives me parenting advice, my response is, if you wanted me to learn this, you should have taught it to me 30 years ago.
Oh, God. Adam, how are you enjoying your stay in tropical Britain?
It's been a blast. I didn't expect it to be so sunny here.
Yeah, it's been a cold blast. When are you back to Los Angeles?
Heading back to the States tonight.
All right, mate. Well, have a great, safe trip. And thanks for dropping in on us.
Such a joy. Thank you.
It's good to meet you in person. That is Adam Grant. He's written another winner. It's called Adam Grant. Well, it's called Hidden Potential, The Science of Achieving Greater Things by the one, the only Adam Grant. It's available now.
The Graham Norton Radio Show.
How exciting is this?
With Waitrose.
Over on Virgin Radio.
Up and Adam, come on, things to do. Don't cheer, you'll just embarrass yourselves. We're not bored of it yet, so it's lovely. There's no stopping them. No stopping them.
The Graham Norton Radio Show.
Oh, there's nothing nicer, is there? Nothing nicer.
With Waitrose. Food to feel good about.
I mean, what's not to like?
Saturday and Sunday from 9:30.
Over on Virgin Radio.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.